Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. For President Carter, who was in Illinois at this time yesterday, a busy foreign policy round is now underway. He met late into the evening with the president of France, and for the past 2 hours this morning, an unexpectedly long time, has been meeting at the White House with Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko. More on those talks from Robert Pierpoint.
As Mr. Carter himself explained during a brief political stopover in Charleston, West Virginia yesterday, the main subject of the talks between the president and Gromyko will be the continuing effort to reach agreement with the Soviet Union over limitations on nuclear armaments.
I'll be meeting with the foreign minister of the Soviet Union, Gromyko, Andrei Gromyko, to talk about some means by which our two great nations who are in competition can live in peace, and so that we might, through assault agreement, eliminate the threat of nuclear destruction that faces us all if we are not successful.
White House Press Secretary Jody Powell said that beyond the subject of SALT, he did not know what other items would be on the agenda for the talks here today between President Carter and Gromyko. But Powell confirmed that the United States has approached the Soviets in recent days with a suggestion that the two sides also try to reach a total ban on nuclear testing, including underground testing. Powell said it was also possible that the two men would discuss Soviet and Cuban activities in Africa, although he stressed, as Mr. Carter himself has in recent days, that the U.S. side still hopes to achieve progress on SALT for its own sake, that is, without necessarily linking it to Soviet-American conflicts elsewhere. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, The White House.
As Gromyko went into the session, the Soviet news agency TASS was publishing its theory for Mr. Carter's falling popularity. TASS said it's because the president keeps giving more money to the Pentagon instead of fighting domestic problems. At the White House last night, the guest was President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing of France, and Lee Thornton has that story.
The French president spent 3 hours in a working dinner with President Carter, Secretary of State Vance, and National Security Chief Brzezinski. But the White House provided only a simple, undetailed statement about that meeting. Africa and the recent developments there were discussed, and the White House statement says there was agreement that concerted action with the African countries is necessary to promote Africa's security and development. But the statement says nothing about what kind of action. Giscard also outlined for President Carter the proposals he made this week at the United Nations disarmament talks. Other topics included the situation in the Middle East and the upcoming seven-nation economic summit in Bonn, Germany, in July. Lee Thornton, CBS News, The White House.
Giscard flew back to Paris right after the dinner. Flying this way today toward a meeting with President Carter is the Prime Minister of Greece, Konstantin Karamanlis. Sirens wailed over Kolwezi today, calling workers back to the copper and cobalt mines for the first time since the Kataki's rebel invasion of Zaire 2 weeks ago. But the mine manager says it will take 6 months to return to full production, and that will depend on attracting replacements for the French and Belgian technicians who were killed or evacuated. Larry Pintak in Kinshasa has more on the slow recovery of Kolwezi.
The first shipment of food supplies for the battle-weary survivors of last week's massacre has reached Kolwezi. A special Red Cross train rolled into town yesterday, carrying some 120 tons of grain for the African civilians who remain. With food stocks from the looted homes and stores just about gone, many have begun fighting a new battle against hunger. Officials expect the grain to last for about 10 days and are already working on bringing more in. The electricity has again been turned on, and at water points throughout the city, Africans are crowded for their first communal bath in over a week. A few whites continue to trickle in from outlying areas. One Belgian farming couple and their Zairean companions who were evacuated yesterday said they were forced to flee into the bush when rebels invaded their farm. And for 10 days, they hid in the forest, existing only on berries and the little food their workers could smuggle to them. Larry Fintak for CBS News, Kinshasa.
The opposition candidate, Antonio Guzman, has been declared the winner in the presidential elections in the Dominican Republic. The announcement that Guzman, a leftist cattle rancher, will take over from Joaquin Balaguer in August produced scenes of celebration in Santo Domingo, as described by Holly Bell of the U.S. Embassy.
Early in the evening, cars were riding around, blowing their horns, with waving white handkerchiefs and other white things out the window. That's the color of the PRD, the Dominican Revolutionary Party, white. And down in the old city, the colonial part of town, they actually were dancing in the streets.
Guzman went on television to declare that his government would be politically in the center and will continue a close relationship with the United States. In West Berlin, five women terrorists shot their way into a jail today and freed a male comrade who was on trial for kidnapping and murder. Police said they escaped in Volkswagen buses. Peking today continues to protest the treatment of Chinese nationals in Vietnam and now is talking of a sea lift to bring them home. Barry Kalb has more from Hong Kong.
The Chinese press today said that as of Wednesday, over 83,000 Chinese had fled from Vietnam to China. That's 10,000 more than the figure given only a couple of days ago, and an indication that the exodus is continuing at full speed. The severity of the situation was underlined by an announcement from China's Office of Overseas Chinese Affairs, saying Peking will send boats, quote, to bring home the persecuted Chinese from Vietnam. The announcement made no mention, however, of when or how this rescue mission will take place. Hanoi is already on the defensive over the exodus and seems unlikely to allow Chinese boats, along with Chinese reporters and television crews, into Vietnamese waters for such an operation. Reports from Peking say Vietnam's Vice Foreign Minister Phan Hien is now there trying to patch things up. Observers there were quoted as doubting the situation would lead to a complete rupture of Sino-Vietnamese relations. But other sources confirm that China has withdrawn technicians who had been working on several aid projects in Vietnam. Barry Kalb, CBS News, Hong Kong.
Sunday driving is an issue in voting this weekend in Switzerland. Tom Fenton has a report.
The Swiss sometimes seem to suffer from an excess of democracy. On Sunday, they'll be voting on no less than five referendum questions, including abortion, subsidies to universities, daylight saving time, and a 10-cent increase in the price of bread. The fifth item is by far the most interesting. A group of young ecologists have proposed a constitutional amendment to ban on one Sunday a month all private cars, motorbikes, mopeds, and private airplanes on and over Swiss territory. The idea may sound impractical, but enough Swiss have taken these young people seriously to put the question on the ballot, and polls show it even has a chance of passing. The aim of the ban is not to save energy, but to save the country from the noise and pollution of Sunday traffic at least 12 times a year. Opponents say the idea is crazy and would make the Swiss look like the village idiots of Europe. The outcome of the vote, at any rate, is likely to be close. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Paris.
Drivers will be out in force in this country this holiday weekend, and state and federal authorities are mounting a campaign to persuade them to use their seat belts. They say that 75 to 100 lives could be saved this holiday if the drivers heed the appeal. It was something like Las Vegas East. The gambling continued through the night in Atlantic City on this first weekend of legalized gambling there. Walt Wheeler of station WCBS reports.
It was a lot like Vegas. The slots jingling, the dealers calling their games, the bettors urging the dice or the ball in the roulette wheel or the card to turn their way. And it was a lot like Vegas in its insulated from the outside world atmosphere, but not quite.
What time is it? My watch has stopped.
The question was more than that of a novice, because at 6 a.m., New Jersey closed its first legal casino for a four-hour break after a day and a night of gambling that kept the casino almost wall-to-wall people throughout. But it was a largely new crowd that closed the casino, a crowd that arrived at 1 and 2 and 3 a.m.
Why the best time?
Because the children were sleeping, and it's quiet, and there were no people on the road.
And what drove them here to Atlantic City on a rainy, cold night that might have been March?
I knew I was coming here. I was going to be here. I had to take a helicopter. I was going to be here.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
That only gave you about 3 hours to play.
That's okay. It really only takes a second to lose some money.
But still, some of the winners and some of the losers just can't wait to get back on that casino floor. Walt Wheeler for CBS News, Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Comedian Jackie Gleason was hospitalized early today in Chicago after complaining of chest pains. Gleason is listed in fair condition. Democratic Representative Clifford Allen of Tennessee is listed in stable condition in a Nashville hospital after suffering a heart attack last night.